Some of them down.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call the meeting, the judiciary meeting for, let me find my script here. I call the Commerce Finance Policy Committee to order on February 23rd, 2026. A quorum is present. Approval of the minutes for February 19th, 2025. Do I hear a motion to approve those minutes? Representative Finke? Thank you. Representative Finke moves the approval of the minutes on February 19th, 2025. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. First up on the agenda today is Senate File 1750. And we have a pinch hitter this morning. So I will move that Senate File 1750 be laid over for possible inclusion. And so before us today is Representative Ray Rauer. And so welcome to the committee. If you'd just like to introduce the bill, and then we will call it testify. Oh, wait, you have a DE9 amendment. I will move the DE9 amendment. Representative Ray Rauer, can you tell us about the amendment, please?
Yeah, thank you so much, Madam Chair. Is it okay if I just do the introduction at the same time?
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you.
I am filling in for Representative Kristen Bonner this morning, who was called away to, has to be in her other committee meeting. So today, 82% of new homes entering the marketplace are in an HOA, with nearly one in four Minnesotans living in an HOA. As CICs and HOAs increase nationally and here at home, our laws have not kept pace. Red and blue states acknowledge a greater need for basic guardrails around transparency, best practice, and consumer protections. Legislators in this room know it is one of our most frequent constituent concerns and one of the hardest to remedy, as Minnesota statute offers little, if any, relief. The bill before you is the culmination of a year and a half deep dive that began with a work group to tackle thorny issues and passionate public listening sessions. Since that time, the bill has received robust review by a wide array of stakeholders and has seen significant revisions. It passed the Senate with a bipartisan supermajority, and the current DE9 fixes lingering concerns from the Senate floor. It reflects intense negotiations, compromise, and has returned stronger. With the chair's permission, we wish to move the DE9 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Ray Rauer. I will move the DE9 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. So with that, thank you, Representative Ray Rauer. Anything else to add, or should we move to testifiers?
We can move to testifiers. Thank you.
So first up on the list is Ron Elwood, followed by Joel Carlson. We are going to try and keep 2 minutes. And so I will announce on decks after Mr. Elwood comes up.
You're presenting today.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, and I apologize to inform you of the pinch hitter this morning.
Thank you, Chair Cagle, Chair O'Driscoll. First, I'd like to thank Representative Weirauer for pinch hitting today. Legal Aid is here today to testify in support of Senate File 1750. The DE9 has come a long way to address the feedback from the authors, Representative Bonner and Representative Mecklen, have heard throughout this process. And I know they are more than willing to continue the dialogue with stakeholders who in good faith are interested in addressing the concerns you all have heard throughout the years about HOAs. I also want to express my deep appreciation to the Minnesota State Bar Association, and particularly Tom Bray, who is the chair of the MCIWA subcommittee of the real estate section of the bar. Mr. Bray has spent a substantial amount of time and shared his vast experience to provide thoughtful and constructive feedback both technically and substantively to this bill. And a considerable number of the changes reflected in today's DE9 are a result of Mr. Bray's analysis. The bill is better for his involvement. Members, this is a homeowner and consumer protection bill. Yes, HOA boards are made up of homeowners who volunteer to run, but according to one property management website, 75% of HOAs are run by management companies who are not elected by the homeowners. The complaints that legislators have received over the years were so great that you formed a task force to look at reforms. That task force heard hundreds of angry homeowners tell stories of outrage about abuse and conflicts of interest by HOAs and management companies, and large and ever-escalating attorney's fees that place their homes in jeopardy. I will share just one story from Legal Aid. We represented an elderly homeowner who was assessed a hefty sum for alleged damage she caused to her unit. She insisted that it was the prior homeowner who caused the damage, and she was not liable for the assessment. Our attorney found the evidence to sustain our client's story and sent that to the HOA's attorney. We got a letter back saying, yes, you're right. We are withdrawing the assessment. Here's our fee for $400. So, members, thank you for hearing this bill, and ultimately I hope this committee will support the vital reforms contained in Senate File 1750. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Joel Carlson on, and then on deck, Matt Greenstein.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, if Mr. Greenstein wants to come up, I need to...
On Zoom?
Be ready to go with him right after me. So,
okay.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business, and I represent the law firm of Greenstein and Sellers, and by extension, their clients, which include homeowners, homeowner associations, management companies, people that are involved in the management and living in common interest communities. And you have an exceedingly complicated issue in front of you right now. We have spent a lot of time, as Mr. Elwood noted, trying to reach resolution, and we are not there, and quite frankly, we're far from being there with a number of the components in this bill. The bill has three major problems from a property owner's standpoint. Number one, it will increase every homeowner's costs. The requirements of this bill, whether it's dispute resolution, limitations on what you can do to collect the money that's owed to all of your other owners that are delinquent in their payments, to a myriad of problems, this will increase costs for every single homeowner and in a way that we don't think has any corresponding benefit. The reason it does that is this bill has a one-size-fits-all approach for every CIC in Minnesota. You're going to hear from the ombudsman, and I read his report. There are about 1.5 million Minnesotans living in these properties. And a $25 fine for a $40,000 or late fee for a $40,000 unit maybe makes sense. And homeowners get to decide that among themselves. A $25 late fee for a $14 million unit in downtown Minneapolis doesn't make much sense. That's the last bill I'm going to pay. And that just pushes the cost for non-compliant owners onto everyone else. This bill, all 54 pages of it, has all kinds of examples where it just forces the cost onto other property owners. And the last thing I'll point out, Madam Chair and members, this isn't a tenant's rights situation. The people that live here own this property. They have vested property rights. This bill and its retroactive nature takes away the property rights that I've purchased, whether it's what I signed up for how parking's gonna be handled in my HOA, or how we're gonna handle disputes, or how we're gonna handle late fees. This changes the benefit of the bargain that I purchased when I bought into the HOA that that I'm residing in. And that is fundamentally unfair. It changes our contract rights, which I think is a violation of our constitutional right to impair my contracts. It has a myriad of problems. This bill needs much greater vetting by both the legal community, management companies, homeowners. You know, I agree with Mr. Elwood that you heard from hundreds of angry homeowners, and some of their stories are exceedingly compelling. But you heard one side from hundreds of angry homeowners. There's a flip side to every single one of these situations. And to have the legislature step in and regulate all of those individual disputes among homeowners is just going to be create a myriad of problems that I hope we don't go down this path until we can reach consensus, and we're not there yet. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Up next is Matt Greenstein, followed by Jenny Sanford. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Greenstein. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Greenstein. I'm the managing partner at the law firm of Greenstein Sellers. I've been practicing in the area of representation of common interest communities and homeowners in common interest communities almost exclusively for 16 years. I'd say I have a lot of experience regarding these issues that have been raised through the HOA task force and that have been raised throughout the legislative process. When I meet with communities at town halls, annual meetings, special meetings, a lot of that conversation is always tackling difficult problems. Communities are facing substantial increases in the cost of insurance, special assessments for deferred maintenance, and are constantly struggling to fund and maintain the property. The associations have a legal obligation to make sure that these services are provided for all homeowners, and that the legal obligations under the Minnesota Common Interest Ownership Act and their declarations are complied with. When I head into these meetings, a lot of times there's a lot of concern. Like constituents for legislators, homeowners have varying opinions, sometimes very strong opinions, on what should be happening. And my job as counsel is always to explain how the governance process works, that we're all in it together, it's a community. Not everyone might like the outcome, not everyone might agree with the outcome, but we have to respect that process, that self-governance process that allows homeowners to choose how they want their community to operate. I'd agree with Mr. Elwood's comments that there is the need for better transparency, better education, better ways to allow homeowners to participate in that self-governance process. And we've provided language and suggestions, some of which that have been incorporated to achieve those goals. But what's left in the bill and what we still have concerns with is the other language that doesn't achieve these goals, that interferes with that self-governance process, that impacts homeowners' property rights and the rights that they purchased when they purchased a property within their community. Even the DE-9 still contains substantial language that we're concerned will increase costs for homeowners. Homeowners are every year facing increased assessments for insurance and other costs, and now there's additional obligations that are going to increase the cost for management, increase the time for board members to meet their fiduciary duties that already exist under law. It's going to impose limitations on the ability to contract the options available for communities. It's going to impose arbitrary caps and structures on the ability of the association to incentivize timely payments, which are necessary in order to fund all these legal obligations. I believe other people will be testifying here today about the financial strain that is on most communities in the state of Minnesota. A big concern is also the language that incentivizes disputes. While we want to have a process where it's transparent and homeowners can provide feedback, we can't have a process where one decision can be questioned indefinitely for years, taking away time, energy, and resources from more important matters. It wouldn't be fair if this committee made a decision on a bill and then 3 years later, every time the committee meets, there's still somebody who wants to testify about a past decision. There has to be a governance process to allow communities to make decisions and move forward without constant dispute. If you go through the language, almost the entirety of the language about homeowners' rights uses words like dispute, contest, demand hearings. And while some of that is appropriate and some of that already exists under the statute, what we're left with is a process where it will be chaos and there will be an inability for associations to operate in an efficient manner.
And my timer, my two-minute timer went off a while ago, so if you could please wrap up your testimony, I'd appreciate it.
So I will wrap up briefly. I know there's also a corrective amendment on this bill or on the statute. That's over 200 pages just to make corrective amendments. My concern is moving forward without properly vetting this bill, cleaning up some of these issues. What we're going to be left with is something that the legislators having to clean up for years and years because of the lack of understanding about these operational concerns. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. All right. Next up, Jenny Sanford, followed by Roxanne Kimball. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Jenny Sanford. Thank you, Chair Cagle, for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jenny Sanford, and I'm the Director of Community Engagement at Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. I lead a dedicated team that supports homeowners who purchase homes with Habitat through the 7-county metro area. Our team's goal is to help homeowners develop essential financial management and home maintenance skills, as well as foster community building so they can thrive in their homes. My team receives calls on anything from water in the basement to people being ready to sell their homes. And by far and away, the calls related to HOAs are the most difficult to resolve. Habitat has developed over 1,500 homes since the year 2000, and 625 of them, or nearly 42%, are in HOAs. There are 65 different HOAs represented in this cross-section, each with its own unique set of governing documents outlining board functions and community rules. Communities elect boards to interpret and apply rules and regulations, but when the processes break down, homeowners often come back to Habitat for assistance. Issues with HOAs are not rare. In the past 6 months, my team has dealt with challenges in 19 of those 65 HOAs in the last 6 months alone. And the challenges are broad. Unexplained fees, lack of transparency, challenges communicating with management companies, foreclosures, and even a desire to disband the HOA altogether. When homeowners call us with concerns, Habitat does what it can to educate and assist with navigating the complexities of governance, but the support and resources we can provide are not enough when the system is flawed. When we invest in affordable housing, we want homeowners to be set up for long-term success. We need the HOA ecosystem in our state to function and provide a supportive environment where families can thrive. It's disheartening for all parties when the HOA conditions undermine that goal. And we support the changes to this bill so that HOAs across the state can succeed. Thank you.
You were right on 2 minutes. Roxanne Kimball, followed by Finn Jacobson. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Cagle, Chair O'Driscoll, and members of the Commerce Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Roxanne Young Kimball. I'm the President and CEO of the Minnesota Homeownership Center and a member of the legislature's HOA Working Group. I'm here today to speak in strong support of SF 1750, which directly addresses the consumer protection gaps in Minnesota's HOA statutes. Minnesota has more than 8,000 HOAs affecting over a quarter of our state's households. Many HOAs function well and support some of the most affordable homeownership housing options in our state. However, some homeowners routinely face issues that, if they were occurring in any other consumer environment, would trigger immediate oversight. Here's one example shared from a foreclosure advisor in Washington County that is illustrative of the need for this legislation. A homeowner correctly submitted paperwork for automatic HOA dues payments. The property management company failed to process it, and the first notice that the homeowner received was a pre-foreclosure letter followed by $3,600 in attorney's fees charged simply for asking for a statement on the account. Foreclosure advisors we support see similar patterns across the state. Under current law, homeowners have no guarantee of an informal, no-cost dispute process to resolve this sort of issue, no protection against attorney fee escalation, and no requirement that payments be applied to assessments first. Another issue squarely in this committee's jurisdiction is market fairness. During the working group, multiple homeowners testified that property management companies were steering contracts to affiliated businesses, bypassing competitive bidding and inflating costs for entire communities. Cases were repeatedly cited for manipulating approvals and self-dealing and highlighted in a March 2025 Minnesota Reformer news article. The Delete All Amendment directly addresses these consumer harms by establishing conflict of interest rules for property managers and boards, requiring competitive bidding for significant contracts, requiring clear, no-cost dispute resolution before charges escalate, and creating reasonable limits on fines and late fees. Giving homeowners more rights and protections for which they have been clamoring. These reforms do not undermine well-run HOAs, they support them, ensuring that communities run smoothly and that homeowners are treated fairly and consistently. SF 1750, as amended, is a balanced set of reforms that promote fairness, reduce questionable practices, and bring Minnesota in line with many states that have enacted similar reforms. I urge your support for SF 1750. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next, Finn Jacobson, followed by Brock Cohen. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Finn Jacobson. I'm an attorney, a partner at SJJ Law, a law firm in Bloomington that represents thousands of homeowner associations across Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. We work on a regular basis with common interest communities, both large and small, urban and rural, working with volunteer board members, community managers, lenders, insurers, and homeowners to try to keep their communities solvent, safe, and functioning. I want to be very clear at the outset. SF 1750, as currently drafted, will increase the cost of living in common interest communities for the homeowners who reside in them. It will reduce housing stability and make association governance harder and more expensive. These impacts are not theoretical. They're predictable, immediate, and unavoidable with the bill in its current form. This bill does not eliminate costs. It increases them with additional hurdles, regulations, and red tape that all common interest communities will be required to comply with. Throughout this bill, the legislature imposes fee caps, contract restrictions, and procedural mandates without eliminating the underlying work that still must be done by these homeowner associations. The homeowner association and its volunteer board of directors are still legally obligated to collect unpaid assessments, to retain legal counsel to comply with statutory duties, and to contract for management, maintenance, and emergency services. When the bill increased these costs, the cost does not disappear or get paid by some third party. It is absorbed by the association and passed through as higher monthly assessments to all owners, including seniors on fixed incomes and first-time homeowners the bill purports to protect. The bill's dispute resolution procedure is an example of well-intended but practically infeasible policymaking. Forcing administrative hurdles and burdens will increase governance difficulty and make it more expensive for an association to comply with its governing documents. This is not speculation. We've seen this effect in other regulated markets. Associations will pay more for management, maintenance, and professional services, or they will struggle to obtain them at all. This bill layers in new procedural requirements, bid mandates, meeting rules, enforcement restrictions, and dispute resolution obligations. Each one requires boards to spend more, not less time, with its legal counsel. Volunteer board members do not have in-house legal departments, nor unlimited budgets. When statutes become internally inconsistent or operationally ambiguous, boards do the only responsible thing. They call lawyers like myself or like Mr. Greenstein's firm. The bill therefore guarantees higher legal costs, even as it attempts to cap recovery of those same costs. Again, these expenses will be borne by the entire community, with the net result being higher assessments in weaker communities. In total, this bill will increase monthly assessments, reduce financial flexibility, impair cash flow, discourage qualified volunteers from board service, and push marginal associations towards financial distress. For some communities, particularly older buildings with rising insurance and repair costs, this bill meaningfully increases the risk of a large, unexpected, unbudgeted special assessment or insolvency.
And Mr. Jacobson, you're at 3 minutes, so if you could please wrap up your
testimony. Thank you. I support modernizing the Minnesota Common Interest Community statutes. Many stakeholders do, but this bill is not ready. It regulates outcomes without understanding operations, it caps costs without reducing obligation, and it substitutes rigid mandates for the judgment of elected volunteer board members and market realities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Brock Cohen, followed by Regina Gonzalez. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brock Cohen, and I'm before you today as the president of the Minnesota Community Association Advocacy, the MCAA. Our organization represents a majority of the property management firms representing the HOAs in Minnesota. Many of them small Minnesota-based businesses that work directly with homeowners and condominiums across the state. I want to begin by thanking Representative Bonner and other authors for their work on this bill and for their willingness to engage with the stakeholders, including the MCAA. We appreciate the dialogue and sharing the same fundamental goal in protecting Minnesota residents and ensuring our communities are well-run, transparent, and accountable. However, in its current form, 1750 will significantly increase the cost for homeowners and residents living in CICs across the state. This large piece of legislation will almost certainly result in increased costs for the very people the bill is intended to protect, the more than 25% of the Minnesotans that live in HOAs across the state. As drafted, the bill restricts certain contract renewals unless agreements allow for termination at any time with as little as 90 days notice. In our business and other service-related businesses like it, renewing contracts that are restricted ultimately increases costs to the consumer. This is because we need stability in pricing to make sure that we protect the integrity of our operations. Again, we want to avoid this because we believe it will raise prices for the end consumer and uncertainty, and then it may also eliminate the ability for people to bid entirely. Associations, as mentioned earlier, do not absorb costs. They pass them on to their homeowners and residents. When fewer bids are received, prices go up overall. This bill also imposes extensive procurement mandates, bid requirements, and operational restrictions on associations' boards. While well-intentioned, these requirements will drive up those costs, as mentioned, by delaying projects, creative administrative burden for volunteer members of those boards, and ultimately limiting overall cost-effective service agreements that exist today. Importantly, Minnesota community associations are governed by volunteer boards, neighbors serving neighbors. These boards already operate with fiduciary duties and responsibilities inside of statutory requirements that exist. Layering a broad one-size-fits-all mandate onto every association, regardless of its size or complexity, will slow decision-making and make it harder for these operations to continue to respond quickly to maintenance issues and emergencies. We want to be clear, we support consumer protections, transparency, and responsible governance. Many of the concepts in this bill reflect best practices already followed by a well-run association. Our concern is that without further refinement, the bill reduces flexibility and places rigidity in ways that will increase the costs for the very consumers that it seeks to protect. We are committed to continuing to work with the authors to refine this legislation so it achieves its goals without unintentionally driving up costs for Minnesota families. Without those changes, 1750 risks creating higher assessments for homeowners, fewer vendor options in those communities, and long-term affordability challenges for the 1.5 million people that live inside of HOAs. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. And next up we have Regina Gonzalez, followed by Linda Digbaum. Okay, Linda, if you wanna come up now. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Linda Dingbaum, and I am here to represent a board member's point of view, someone that's in the trenches. I've lived at my townhome association, Lowman's Amherst, for about 34 years. I've been active in the management and on the board for most of that time. When I first got on the board, we couldn't pay our bills. We had to have a special assessment, and it was very painful. We did some analysis and determined that less than half of our homeowners paid by the 15th of the month, and dues were due on the 1st. The tools that we used to get back on our feet, where we are today, much better, we are financially stable, are being kind of eliminated in this bill. Mandating a specific charge for late fees for every HOA is very difficult. It's going to cause a lot of problems, and it's going to make it more difficult for us to collect our dues. The only income HOAs have is homeowner dues, and the HOA is not this big bad corporation. We're simply a group of neighbors. We're a pass through. We pay expenses for our homeowners, and you know some of the. It's already really difficult to get board members. It's volunteer. It's thankless, and you lose your ability to enjoy the amenities. We have a pool. I haven't been able to use it nearly the entire time that I've been there because homeowners are kind of abusive to board members. Not kind of, they are abusive to board members. It concerns me that all the legislation is down to the minute detail, where it just needs to be a little broader to allow HOAs to function, allow people to serve on the board, and be able to get board members. It is so difficult. I'm very concerned about being able to get board members and what happens to HOAs when you can no longer get qualified board members. That's very concerning to me. Just from the point of the view of someone that has served and lived in an association, a big one, we have relatively large, 276 homeowners. We need the ability to get our homeowners to comply with the rules that they agreed to when they bought their homes, the rules that protect everybody. We have very few people that don't follow the rules, but the ones that don't follow the rules create problems for everyone. So I don't know where I am on time, but I just wanted to say the bill would be more appropriate if it was a little broader and didn't legislate specific dollar amounts. And keep in mind, HOA are governed by volunteer homeowners. Adding additional workload to those volunteers when they already have jobs and they already work a lot of volunteer hours for the board just makes it a lot harder to get qualified board members. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. All right. Regina Gonzalez, then followed by Bridget Blunt. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the right order. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Regina Gonzalez.
Welcome.
So, Honorable Chair and members, my name is Regina Gonzalez. I am a homeowner and a mother of a 7-year-old boy, and it is my family and families across Minnesota that I testify for. On March 14th of 2025, I noticed that my drip edge and fascia were loose and hanging off the exterior of my home. I immediately notified my property manager, noting rain in the forecast, and submitted a maintenance request. Unfortunately, it took them 12 days to make any repairs. In those 12 days, my drip edge and fascia were exposed to rain multiple times. In April of 2025, we started noticing a musty smell coming from my son's bedroom. On June 23rd, we discovered mold growth in the wall cavity insulation and sheeting board. Third parties' inspections indicated that this was caused by an exterior issue. While trying to work with my property management company, they directly shifted the blame onto my windows and dismissed the fact that it took them 12 days to repair any damages. I had another engineer assess my home, and he reported that this was caused by lack of maintenance, exterior maintenance, all which fall under the HOA's responsibilities. Despite these findings, my property management and HOA have refused to acknowledge the results of the inspections and still claim it is my window. In their response, they reserve the right to assess all damages back to our unit and insist that I cease all communication with my HOA board and neighbors. My family and I have been displaced from our home for 8 months now due to mold. We are still paying mortgage, insurance, and HOA fees and utilities. My lawyer has been trying to help us, but without the Attorney General's office and Ombudsman's office, we are unable to hold them accountable. So I am here asking honorable members of the House to be my family's voice and take action so that this nightmare we are living today does not happen to any other family.
Thank you very much. Sorry for all that. Next up, we have Bridget Blunt, followed by Jolene Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Okay, my name is Bridget Blount. Good morning, all. My name is Bridget Blount. I bought into a HOA community in June of 24. With it being a new construction, vendors had already been selected. In April of 2025, our board of directors was chosen and I was voted president. With excitement and a great vision for our community, we, the board of directors, hit the ground running. With all the ups and downs, I could share a lot of them. Today, I will focus on management. It has been a nightmare, frustrating and exhausting, to say the least. Our board has been lied to, lied on, gaslit, and at times just straight out ignored. Our management company sided with vendors when they were wrong and stood in the way of direct contact with us being able to directly talk to the services or the vendors. We were charged for services that never took place and for units we weren't responsible for. Our management company did not want us securing our own vendors. We have since gotten rid of their landscapers, their irrigation services, their decking, and other vendors that was left behind by the builder, including the management company as of March 1st. We have partnered with an amazing, so far, management company. Just as we have done with other vendors we have since partnered with, we sit down, we have conversation, we were heard, we were understood, and assured services will be on the up and up. I come before you today asking, pleading amongst many things that needs attention. We homeowners, board members that could really use laws that will protect us from predatory management companies. That's been my experience. These companies know we have to pay them or there will be consequences to us. As community members, not paying our association fees, my question is, are there consequences for mediocre performances, shoddy services, pushy tactics to hire their company for maintenance issues, overpriced maintenance, subcontractors, and questionable contracts, just to name a few? It is long overdue that laws reflect and protect HOAs and the homeowners from whom live in them. Luckily, I am part of an amazing family, Habitat for Humanity. I was able to draw from references and resources provided me at the time of and after the purchase of my home. I was able to call on Tim Braun from the CAI, the Community Association Institute. I was able to call on Jenny and her team that has been a constant pillar of my journey in the world of HOA. Reform is necessary. Reform is needed. I like to piggyback off Ms. Gonzalez's story. My unit, 112 units I'm responsible for in my association, my unit was suffering from black mold. I walked in, I could tell that my frame in my garage was bowing. Took pictures, sent it over. They said, yeah, we'll have somebody come over and just screw it up higher. I walked through the community and I noticed that other ones were bowing and I'm taking pictures. I'm like, no, this is systemic. This is not just a one-off. I called them. Of course, they gave me the call your HOA and have HOA take care of it. They were still in our community building. Oh, absolutely not. Our HOA is not responsible for this. This is a builder's issue. They ignored me. They want to push me to the side. I went to the city. I got the city involved. They had to come out, replace my entire garage frame, and went in three layers to remove all the black mold and treat it. I have since had them come back out and go through every unit, including the ones that hadn't been built. They're done now, excuse me. They're done now, but the ones that hadn't been built, they replaced the flashing on all of the units because I kept telling them, there is no flashing. I have videotape. I have, guys, we have to do better.
Thank you.
If we are going to give our monies, we want to have services that represent us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Next up, Jolene Johnson, followed by Matt McNeil. And then if there's any members of the public, please let our pages know. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Jolene Johnson, and my husband, Zach Armstrong, and I have lived in Heritage Park neighborhood of North Minneapolis for 18 years. I'm here today to express my full support as SF 1750. Our neighborhood is racially and economically diverse, with many homes purchased through Habitat for Humanity or city programs for income-qualified buyers, just as ours was. However, because of a city mandate stemming from the Holman Decree, our single-family homes were forced into a master HOA. I want to be clear, this HOA is not responsible for any common elements and provides zero services. Its sole purpose has become collecting dues and finding members. We have paid nearly $5,000 in dues to this HOA since we moved in and have received no benefits other than occasional national night out parties. In 2020, we received a violation letter over a garden that had been placed for 10 years with very few changes. When we began attending board meetings to address this, we uncovered something deeply disturbing. The HOA was talking about initiating foreclosures on 10 homes out of nearly 100 homes in our HOA. The HOA refused to disclose this information to us, even after multiple requests. We had to comb through the Hennepin County property records house by house to find foreclosure filings. Neighbors were put in foreclosure proceedings over late fines and dues of under $500, including for issues as minor as leaving garbage cans out too long. In the end, 10 homeowners, all black, were put into foreclosure proceedings. Two homes made it as far as the sheriff's sale. While through to the tireless work of lawyers and nonprofits, nobody lost their homes. Many families endured incredibly stressful situations all over an HOA that provides no services. We organized and fought these discriminatory foreclosures and filed an attorney general complaint. In retaliation, the management company stated that any further questions would be routed through their lawyer and billed to us. They ultimately charged us nearly $4,000 for simply asking questions and fighting for our neighbors. We were billed for the time spent responding to resident petitions and even newspaper articles written about our situation. The HOA aggressively billed other residents for legal fees too. Some were even charged just for requesting itemized receipts. Crucially, our data collection showed that non-white residents were forced to pay different legal fees than white residents. If this were a public government organization, clear rules would bar this discrimination and provide avenues for recourse. Because the current HOA laws benefit management companies at the expense of residents, addressing these abuses was incredibly challenging. Through a pro bono lawyer, we eventually reached a settlement with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, which included the repayment of legal fees and monitoring to prevent further discrimination. However, MDHI do not have the authority to dissolve our unnecessary HOA. In fact, there was no feasible way for anyone to dissolve our HOA under current state laws. Our current board unanimously wants to dissolve. Under current law, doing so requires the approval of 80% of homeowners and 80% of mortgage holders. While we have the support of 95% of our homeowners, we are trapped by an impossible hurdle of getting dozens of financial institutions to sign off. Meanwhile, due to the insurance claims for this ordeal, our board insurance skyrocketed from $2,000 to over $9,000 a year, significantly increasing our yearly dues. We are trapped in an organization providing zero benefits. Without this bill, we will be forced to further raise dues on low and moderate income families just to cover the cost of existing and go back down the road of foreclosure proceedings. It is sickening to imagine taking a neighbor's home just to maintain a state mandated HOA that provides no value to its residents that everyone agrees should not exist. This bill protects homeowners. This bill provides critical common sense solutions to the nightmare that we've lived through. It allows for the dissolution of single family HOAs with no common elements by 67% vote of owners. This removes the impossible bank approval mandate. While our type of HOA is not common, this reform is critical. It also provides an avenue for single family HOAs to move toward dissolution by removing common elements they no longer want to maintain. It requires free notice before an HOA can refer a homeowner's question to legal counsel. This prevents the excessive bills that we receive. It is also vital the provisions that force transparency and limit massive legal fees for issues that can be resolved without lawyers. It bars foreclosure for minor fines and for past due bills that are relatively small and recent. It prevents municipalities from forcing the creation of unnecessary HOAs. Cities should not be allowed to offload governance and typical city services to unaccountable HOA boards, especially when future residents have virtually no recourse to dissolve an HOA that isn't accountable to them. In conclusion, HOAs have shown to increase the cost of homeownership and exacerbate segregation by income and race. This bill makes critical changes to prevent the worst abuses while still allowing well-run, transparent HOAs a way forward. Nobody should be forced to endure what my neighbors and I faced. I urge you to support or to vote yes on this bill and to make Minnesota a leader in protecting homeowner rights over management company and lawyer profits. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Matt McNeil, followed by Keenan Ravity. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you. Co-Chair Cagle and members of the committee, I appreciate your time to testify, and many of you, I appreciate the time you've offered over the course of the interim to talk about this important piece of legislation. My name is Matt McNeil. I represent Cities Management. Cities Management is one of four associate companies in market. We have four offices here with more than 150 employees. We serve more than 500 communities and 45,000 homeowners across the state of Minnesota. We've served Minnesota for more than four decades, and we're one of the nation's largest association management companies. I'm here today in opposition to 1750. But I do want to be clear, we support reform in this space. Improving transparency and disclosure and due process for homeowners is a valid and important goal, one we share. Our concerns is not with the intent, but with the practical impact on homeowners. I myself am a homeowner in a CIC and am troubled by the legislation. Senate File 1750, as currently drafted, will increase costs for homeowners who are already under financial stress. Expanded procedural requirements necessitate additional legal review and ongoing professional services. Expanded procedural requirements will necessitate additional legal review. New notice and voting approval thresholds will require greater administration, coordination, and outside counsel. Compliance obligations will trigger governing document updates, carrying substantial legal and recording costs. And broader litigation exposure likely to raise insurance premiums, including directors' and officers' coverage for volunteer board members serving their neighbors. What I continue to also find troubling is a lot of circular logic. For example, with relationship to special assessments, when the association is considering the process of a special assessment, they would duly call a meeting of the members to vote on said assessment, this offering owners the democratic process. The statute as written allows one owner to then attend that meeting, participate in that governance, but then to contest that and continue to contest that ongoing. Think of things that are, important for the association: insurance or roof replacement, mandated structural repairs, or necessary reserve contributions. The financial consequence that these delays will cause is directly on all of the homeowners. The democratic process embedded in that legal framework is not without merit. It reflects what we as owners agreed to when we took title to the property, like so many other changes proposed here. But the most recent draft goes further, allowing an individual owner to independently contest and even have full opportunity to participate in the process. We also note the contracting provisions still do not adequately address insurance claims, an area that generated significant feedback during the working group process. The existing statutory consumer protections are more than adequate, and this unique procedural needs of claims handling for multi-unit commercial assets deserve restraint. Minnesota's common interest communities are extraordinarily diverse, from small seasonal cabins to volunteer-run rural townhomes, master plan communities, and large urban high-rises. Senate File 1750 applies a single framework to all of them. What's administratively manageable for a professionally staffed downtown condominium may be operationally and financially impossible for a 20-unit rural association governed entirely by volunteers. We have continued to engage in good faith through the process and remain committed to that collaboration. We want to be part of a solution, but in its current form, Senate File 1750 does not yet reflect the diversity, complexity, or the financial realities of the community and homeowners it intends to serve, and we are unable to support it at this time. We look forward to continued dialogue and stand ready to work alongside stakeholders as this committee toward legislation that generally protects homeowners with replacing undue burden on the communities they call home. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then last on our list is Keenan Ravity. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Keenan Ravity, and I chair government affairs for the Minnesota Mortgage Association. Here to testify on SF 1750 as amended, and also to briefly explain the intersection of mortgage banking, mortgage lending, and homeowners association. Mortgage lenders take a secured interest in a property. They use it as collateral for mortgage loans, and as such, we have a vested interest in not only the health of the borrower, the homeowner, the consumer, but also in the homeowners association. While typically our industry is relatively silent on regulating other industries, given our formal interest in the matter, we were offered the opportunity and took advantage of providing some modest feedback, both through the working groups and legislative commissions as they existed, and also the legislative process, and that now appears in the amended form that you see before you. This has really been a collaborative effort. Some of the stakeholders who are here today may have asked if mortgage lending and mortgage banking would be in favor of this legislation, and I have to formally report that our concerns in the bill have been heard and incorporated in the amended version that you have before you. In short, we are comfortable with the reasonable, common-sense approach that this addresses some of the concerns that the legislative working group uncovered without over-regulating. I thank you for your understanding in this matter. I wish you best with your work, and thank you for your service to Minnesota.
Thank you very much. And is there any other members of the public wishing to testify? Okay, no, good. All right, we will move to member discussion. Representative Dotson, and if I, do you wanna come up? And Mr. Elwood, if you'd like to come up for any technical assistance we may need, I'd appreciate that. Representative
Dotseth. Thank you, Madam Chair, the author to, or the sponsor of the bill today. Question I've got is, I guess a, more of a comment, is I think we all realize that there's some corrections that need to be made. But I think we have to be careful on realizing that one size doesn't fit all. And maybe look at the opportunity. Has anyone approached the opportunity of maybe looking at a mediation process to facilitate some of these issues? But the question I have, maybe Ron can answer, Mr. Elwood can answer this question. My understanding, a lot of these individuals, when they purchase their property, they've got, what, 10 days right of review of those documents. Can you confirm if that is correct, Ron?
Mr. Elwood?
Madam Chair and Representative Dotseth, yes, they have a period of time to review and either approve or reject the purchase.
Representative Dotseth?
Just a follow-up question on that would be, is the concern I've got is some of these individuals may acquire these properties due to some of those guidelines that are in those documents. They may be investing in the community to make sure that there are some guardrails to protect their financial interest. Could we look at some potential litigation in the future due to changing some of these bylaws or putting some of these corrections that they did not originally purchase when they acquired the property?
Mr. Elwood?
Madam Chair and Representative Dotseth, Chapter 515 has been amended 18 times since 1993. And so some of those amendments are prospective and others are retroactive. And so your question is the same question that prior legislatures have faced. And it's exactly the same thing. If I purchased today and the legislature changed the statute, in fact, one of the provisions in Chapter 515 actually contemplates future changes to the statute. So, you know, the law is the law, and you have the right to change it. And you have the right. There's been some issues around retroactive lawmaking that's been raised. And as I mentioned, the legislature has done that in the past. And it can do it again. It's your prerogative to do that, to change the law to protect folks. So I would also just mention that, you know, you have 10 days to review some extraordinarily complex and legal easy kind of documents. It's a tremendous amount of paper. And, you know, if you've ever bought a house, I wonder how many folks in this room have actually read all the documents that you signed when you bought that house and understood. I apparently one legislator has done that. I can see raising his hand. But this is the same thing. I mean, I think most people, you know, assume that, well, I want to buy the unit and this is it. And you know, is it an excuse that they don't read it and understand it and go to a lawyer? No. But is that the reality of life? Yes, it is. And so that's why I think it's critically important to create some basic ground rules to protect folks. And I would just, well, I'll stop there.
Thank you. Any follow-up? All right. Next on the list is Representative Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have more of a comment as well. You know, there's a lot of things in this bill that I really question. I'm trying to understand how new laws, new regulations are going to control cost. I've been in this space as a business owner. I own a management company, and we've managed properties like this. And my experience tells me that, you know, we work with the homeowners. We are a team with them. And it's been my experience, if Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner on a board don't like my service, they fire me, they get rid of me. And I think our laws still allow that. So I think adding this, you know, is just, it's obviously an extra law, extra rules that we don't need, that volunteer boards are gonna have even a harder challenge understanding. As I have sat with homeowners, the biggest piece that they look to do at every month and every year is to control their costs. And you know, this is only gonna, as we've been hearing from testifier after testifier, this is only gonna increase costs to these boards that are, several of these organizations are just surviving now. And I question, one of the testifiers said that 75% of the homeowner associations are run by management companies. No, they're ran by local boards, homeowners that have ran for these spots and been elected. They aren't ran by management companies. They work with management companies. So thank you.
Representative Rauer.
Yes, thank you so much for your comments. I did get the opportunity to hear this bill in the housing last year. Mm-hmm. And what it really does is add a layer of transparency and accountability. Now, I'm sure that your board is run well and making the right decisions. Unfortunately, we heard a lot of very specific examples about bad actor boards, and that's what this is about, is holding those accountable. I would ask you to also touch base with Representative Meckland, who gave some very specific stories. If I remember correctly, which I may not because it was a year ago, there was a very specific example of a board choosing to replace septic, and it was going to cost the homeowners $20,000 apiece, and they were only giving them a few months to pay that bill. So sometimes decisions can be made that are irresponsible and unaccountable, and there needs to be a path for resolution for that. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Mr. Elwin.
Madam Chair and members, a couple of things. First of all, in terms of the comment that, you know, if you don't like somebody, we can fire them. Well, under the under the current law, actually you can't if the declarant has created a contract that requires the board that is not yet elected to continue that management company in perpetuity. The section of the bill would actually give the elected boards the right to fire that management company if they don't like them and get a new one. So so actually that does allow you to fire somebody if you don't like them, which you can't do now. The other thing I'd say is in terms of, you know, we keep hearing this thing's going to increase costs. Well, you know, part of this bill is intended to reduce costs to homeowners. For example, you know, competitive bidding process is one that actually is a critically important piece of this bill, which is in other states' laws as well. You've heard there have been many news stories about excessive costs and self-dealing and unnecessary repairs, roof repairs, hail damage, things such as the like. And this would require bids, but only on amounts work, construction work, repair work of over $50,000. So it gives the board, I mean, I think that's a perfect example of a balanced provision in this bill because it provides a lot of flexibility for the board to provide, to do the work that they need to do, but when it's a big job, they have to get a bid. And the last thing I'd say is that many of the provisions that are in this bill are in place in other states across the nation. And the homeowners associations have not gone under. There's plenty of homeowners. In fact, they're in states with far more homeowners associations than are here in Minnesota. So the world is not going to collapse when this bill passes. Homeowners will be better protected.
Okay. Any follow-up? All right. We will move on to Representative Allen then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is a question to the author. The House version we have here is different than the Senate version, especially with the addition of the DE-9 amendment. I'm just kind of wondering exactly what are you expecting the Senate to are you expecting the Senate to concur on this and possibly take this to a conference committee just because of the major difference between the two bills, or what's your expectations?
Mr. Elwood.
Madam Chair and Representative Allen, I think it's the I know it's the author's hope that the stakeholders and the folks who came here to testify with concerns today will, in good faith, come to the table and settle on reasonable reforms. Look, this DE-9 reflects a tremendous number of concerns and issues that have been raised between the time this bill was introduced and today. In fact, the Senate version went through four iterations, changing every time to listen to people's concerns. So I am of the understanding that if we can get a bill out of the House that works, the Senate will concur.
Thank you, and I think being part of this conversation for a while, The author of the bill has a spreadsheet with every single change that has been incorporated and which stakeholder that suggestion came from. And so there's been some very due diligence done on this bill. Representative Allen, did you have any follow-up on that one?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Katisa Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to all the testifiers who came in to share their stories and their thoughts today, I just want to express my appreciation. Mr. Elwood just kind of got to the point of the bill that I wanted to highlight in discussions, because I've got a lot of concerns that there aren't any anti-kickback provisions in statute up to this moment in time. That's ludicrous. It's insane that an elected body of neighbors then, you know, would reach out to an operations management company for their assistance, for their expertise, and then that management company could require them to utilize their preferred vendors without any sort of competitive bid process, without, you know, anything. There's nothing in state statute up to this point that requires competitive bidding, and that is flabbergasting to me. So for that only, I would support the DE and urge other members to support. But I think also the section about the board meetings and how there's no, up to this point, again, no regulation that the board must make the meeting agenda, contracts, and documents that the board intends to approve or disapprove at the board meeting. This is line 24.26, that section, members, available to unit owners in any reasonable manner, including but not limited to electronic mailing or posting on the association's website. How are people supposed to know what the board is considering if there is nothing posted? How are they supposed to know that they need to rearrange their childcare schedule so that they can attend this meeting and speak to or against the provision that the board is considering approving or disproving at a board meeting if these things are not publicly available to the residents of these communities? This is long past due, and I appreciate the bipartisanship, all of the folks who have come to testify at the numerous task force meetings, all the work that has been done up to this point. And I really think that we need to move forward on updating our state statute to protect homeowners who reside in these types of communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My co-chair over there stole a lot of my thunder. I think this bill is a little too broad, as you see by the level of controversy, to pass in such a narrowly divided body. The provisions mentioned by Chair Katisa Watun, I am very supportive of as well, and I think it would be the best path for the bill would be limiting itself more to provisions like those. I'm a co-author on the bill to demonstrate that, oh my goodness, this needs to be addressed. The fee areas of the bill, the fee caps and those kind of things, will inevitably raise costs for all homeowners, because any loss of revenue is going to be distributed across all the other homeowners. And as somebody who used to live in an association, I would much rather have the people violating the terms of the agreement bear the costs of violating the agreement rather than myself, as I have yet to be fined by my homeowners association. And just my experience on this has been the management company of the association I used to live in, when we had the great hailstorm of 2017, required the association I live in to use the vendor they owned to repair our roofs. We pushed back and said we'd like to solicit bids from others. They said, well, if you solicit bids, we're going to charge a fee on any other contractor you go with unless you go with the contractor that we own. And the fact that practices like those are happening in these situations where homeowners are now captive is
something that needs to be addressed. Absolutely. I just, like, that was a gigantic fight. My association did lawyer up and fight it, and we had to bear those costs. And eventually, they relented and didn't charge the fee, but we basically paid the fee in attorney's fees to make that happen. So on those provisions, I think we, if we're going to get something passed this year, let's narrow it to these provisions. The fine capping and issues like that, I don't see how that's not going to raise costs because, as it was earlier mentioned, these are pass-through organizations. They pass the costs right on. So if there is money not coming in, they're going to have to find it somewhere. However, the bad practices of bad actors, I do think we should be addressing as the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative West. And I do want to point out, and there might be a typo in this line, but 19.1 through 19.3, it should say that it did not exceed, and I thought the agreed upon language was 25 or 5% of the amount owed. And so, and it's the greater of those two. So it's not necessarily putting a cap on it because it is a percentage of that. But I do understand that there are some cash flow, questions and want to make sure that that the cash flow is there for the homeowners associations. And so that was one of the things that I know the stakeholders worked on. We'll have to make some changes on that language because I believe the intent was or, not of. And just a reminder, too, we are laying this bill over so that we can maybe work to address some of these issues as well. And so we'd also like to get to some of the other bills today. So I have a couple more folks on the list. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we're low on time, so I'm just going to ask that Mr. Joel Carlson could come back up. I had a question.
Come on up, please.
As you're making your way, Mr. Carlson, I'll just start. There was some testimony that was talking about legal aid, addressing those who may be able to access legal aid. If you could just clarify or give another perspective on that particular issue, that'd be great.
Mr. Carlson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heitzman. Love my friends at Legal Aid. We may have different perspectives on some of the questions that have come your way and don't represent all of the homeowners that maybe that we represent. And so some of the questions about reviewing documents and the 10 days and, you know, the solutions in this bill make it more confusing for homeowners and insert the legislature into making these decisions and take them away from, the local democracies that these CICs are in every single circumstance, whether it's a barndominium or a residential townhome or, a downtown condominium. This one size fits all doesn't work for every single situation, and that's one of our problems. The other thing that I think the committee really needs to know is that these are not just everybody just get in a room. These nonprofit boards are governed by statute. They're governed by the Minnesota Nonprofit Corporation Act 317. They have all kinds of regulations that they follow about their meetings, about their notice. That's not being discussed here. It sounds like they just operate in a vacuum and do whatever they want. They do have rules. Homeowners do have recourse. And I think we're losing a little bit of that in this conversation, that people do have the right to self-determine. They don't like their management company, fire them. Representative West, I love your story that you pushed back on that very onerous contract provision that at some point a board agreed to and they maybe shouldn't have. But I'm glad they pushed back. That's a terrible idea. Why, as a homeowner, do I want to not accept bids to try and get the best price and the best product possible for the property I live in? That makes no sense that people have an incentive to increase their own costs to help a management company. So I hope we think of some of those things that these people are just volunteers. I lived in one for a single family HOA for 30 years. I used to laugh. I'd pay more to not go to the meetings. But they're doing what they can. And there are problems, yes. Are there problems that the legislature can step in and fix in every single human interaction that you have in your residence? No, that's not going to happen. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cha, quick question, please.
Thank you. Just a short question. You know, are there any educational requirements for these board members and these HOAs?
Representative Ray Rauer or Mr. Elwood?
Madam Chair and Representative Cha, no, there are no qualifications or criteria or training or education to be a board member.
Except for being a homeowner. And Mr. Carlson.
Yep, Madam Chair and Representative Cha, that's a great question. And you should see and talk to the people that are doing board training, that are out working with the boards. That absolutely is happening. And it doesn't need a mandate of statute to take place. Do some of them maybe need more? Sure. But it absolutely happens. People are not just saying, gee, what are we going to do here? There are programs of board training. There are associations that provide the training. It absolutely goes on. It just isn't reflected in this bill.
Thank you. Any follow-up?
That's all I have. Thank you.
Please quickly, and then we're going to lay the bill over. Representative Cha? Oh, you're done?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And given the interest of time here, I'll just take a couple of moments. I do have firsthand experience with this professionally and have trained probably 70% of all people with Minnesota real estate licenses in this state on this very topic. And one of the things that I want to just background for the committee is prior to June 1st of 1994, when this statute came into play, 515, to regulate common interest communities, we were governed under the Uniform Condominium Act. And if you think we have problems now, you should have seen the Uniform Condominium Act, right? That was generic across the entire country, and it wasn't doing the work that Minnesotans needed. As Mr. Elwood has pointed out, this statute has been amended several times to update and to modernize that. One of the things I think you need to keep in mind, members, as we're contemplating this, is it is not the evil board. It is not the evil property management company. We heard about neighbors. It's literally the neighbors who are on these boards. And two things that I've heard from the homeowners association that my mother lived in was, number one, please, please, please do not raise our association fees because we're just getting by right now. We made this decision to live here because we can't physically shovel our own driveways, move our own trash cans, doing all these different kinds of things. We want this level of service from the association. And they've made a very strong and conscious decision to buy into a particular subdivision that's governed by a CIC. And what that means is they expect that the rules that are in that CIC are to abide by all and to be followed by all homeowners within that association. Not just some, not the ones who didn't read the paperwork. Under 515, there's a statutory requirement that if you're buying a common interest community property, you receive documents, bylaws, declaratory documents, as well as other financial documents about the property. Whether people choose to read those or not, or choose to read and understand those or not, is still a problem 30 years later in the industry. I'm hoping that as a part of this, and I've heard nothing about this other than with Representative Cha just saying, hey, is there anything out there for a boards to have training on here? It would be helpful in first-time homebuyer programs or other homebuyer programs where we counsel people. We spend time talking about HOAs. What are they? How do they work? Why is it important? The HOA hires the property management company because no individual has expertise, most likely, that's needed to be able to do the day-to-day operations on here. And when a vacancy comes on board, everybody locks their doors, shuts their shades, and doesn't answer mail or phone calls because here comes somebody asking me to be on the board, and I want nothing to do with that. By the way, the reason why we have 82% of new developments having HOAs is because it takes the burden off of the cities, the counties, and the townships for regulation. When you put higher density in a given area, you're going to have more compatibility issues and use issues that we hope the HOA will deal with, so we don't have the police being called, music's too loud, this person's doing this, this person's dog is running on my property, that we internalize those things within the Homeowners Association for neighbors to work with neighbors to resolve issues. I will be the first to acknowledge that there are some deficiencies in the current law, but I fear that we'll be back here in a few years saying, cost of homeowners association dues have gone up. We have to put a moratorium on that. We have to put some kind of a regulation. They can't go up more than 5% a year because people can't afford these, and they're losing their homes through foreclosure because they're not keeping up on their agreements, right? So we have to think maybe more than twice, more than three times, more than four times that we're doing the right thing. Small incremental steps are going to be important. And with that, I know that the next thing that we have coming up is extremely important because it's this committee which drove the issue of creating the Ombuds Office for HOAs in the Department of Commerce as an intake so we could learn more as the legislature about what are the hot button issues, and we could give conscious contemplation to those and offer solutions as we continue to move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. And with that, I will lay over, or Representative Braywell, would you like any wrap-up comments?
Yes, thank you. It'll just be short comments. Thank you for the opportunity to present the bill on behalf of the bipartisan authors, Representative Shane Mecklen and Representative Kristen Bonner. We do want to point out in brief, it's worth noting, a quick review of the letters in opposition are based on the older version of the bill, with most of those concerns being addressed in the DE-9 amendment today. The SF-1750 creates a strong framework of consumer protections for homeowners and solid guardrails to set up association boards and property managers for success. So we appreciate and your support in favor of this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And with that, I will lay over Senate File 1750. Is that right?
Yep.
For possible inclusion. All right. Next up, we will be going with the ombudsman person presentation. So if we could get the Department of Commerce folks up here to present that. And then hopefully we'll have our author for the next bills up here. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Cagle, Representative O'Driscoll, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Payne, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Enforcement at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. This morning, I'm here to talk about the new Minnesota Common Interest Community Homeowners Association Ombudsperson Office.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Lean in. Move the mic a little bit more. There we go. Thank you.
All right. Hopefully, that's better. That's good. The first slide we have details some numbers on CICs and HOAs in Minnesota, but in the interest of time and given that the previous speakers have gone over a lot of this, we won't go through these in detail. But I do want to talk about what the Minnesota CIC and HOA Ombudsperson Office is. As acknowledged, the legislature created this office in 2025. It is codified in Minnesota statutes, section 450137. And the office serves as a neutral, educational, and problem-solving resource for Minnesota's common interest communities. The goal is to help unit owners, tenants, and associations understand their rights under Chapter 515B and to facilitate dispute resolution between unit owners and associations. Services that the Minnesota CIC HOA Ombuds Office provides includes creating and maintaining a website containing plain language information, education, relevant statutes, and other resources for unit owners and associations. Our website went live early last month. We provide plain language educational materials about common provisions in CIC governing documents. We identify resources and referrals relating to the rights and responsibilities of unit owners and associations. We review complaints to identify patterns and recurring issues, and we will soon offer free informal mediation for disputes involving Minnesota statutes, Chapter 515B, and government documents when appropriate and as capacity allows. Just really quickly, a few things that the Ombuds Office cannot provide is neither the Ombuds nor the Commissioner may provide legal advice. We may not act as an attorney or represent owners, tenants, or associations in legal proceedings. We do not have enforcement authority to investigate complaints, issue fines, or make binding decisions as we do with some of the other areas under our purview. The ombudsperson also does not intervene in internal association operations, such as elections, budgets, dues, or management decisions. here is a picture of what our website looks like when you go to find us. As I said, it launched last week. It includes pertinent information for both unit owners, tenants, and associations. Again, there's those plain language explanations of common governing documents in CIC and HOAs, information about the services of our offices, again, describes rights and responsibilities for unit owners, and associations, and provide some guidance on additional resources and alternative dispute resolution. unit owners, tenants, and associations can request help of the ombuds via our website, email, U.S. mail, or by visiting in person to our offices in the Golden Rule building. And as you can see on the slide, this is a picture of what our website looks like when you are going to request services and how you can get there. We are still currently developing an informal mediation program with the Ombuds Office. It will be voluntary, no-cost process for resolving disputes between CICs and HOAs and their unit owners. We are currently creating the internal infrastructure and legal documents that we need to begin offering informal mediation. So assistance that's been sought from our office to date, we have received 61 complaints and 659 calls or inquiries. The common issues in those complaints and inquiries have been related to dues and special assessments, maintenance-related issues, insurance questions and disputes, accessing governing documents and financial information of the CIC or HOA, and fees, fines, collection charges, and attorney's fees. This next slide lets you know how you can contact us. Again, it has our website, email, phone number, and our request portal for assistance. In closing, although the office is still new and we are continuing to work hard to build out its capacity, we are proud of the outcomes that we have been able to achieve on behalf of Minnesotans living in common interest communities who have already reached out to us for help, helping owners, tenants, and associations understand their rights and responsibilities, and look forward to soon facilitating dispute resolution through informal mediation. Thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. We will move to questions. Representative Van Vinsberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question about what's the projection for staff with this new office, and what's your budget for this? I know we passed this in the last session. Can you refresh my memory on that?
Assistant Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair, Representative. I did not bring the budget details with me. I can get back to you on that. I can tell you we have one full-time staff member who is devoted to preparing the educational materials, answering calls, emails, and will be is also a certified mediator and will be doing the informal mediation that our office will provide. So it's a small office, but we hope to do a lot of good.
Thank you. And Ms. Beckel may be able to answer the budget issues. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. So the bill last year appropriated $347,000 per year, so $694,000 per biennium for the Common Interest Community Ombudsperson Office.
Thank you. Any follow-up? Any other questions from the committee? Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the information. Was wondering if, given the fact that we spent a lot of time just talking about the issues of 515 and the CICs, is there any preliminary indications or trends that we're seeing that you could provide the committee as we're contemplating what to do with the HOA 515 changes right now? And you know, maybe you could come back at a future point in time when we take this up to share that with some of the common complaints that you're hearing. So maybe we can look at some of those as well for our discussions and deliberations on how to approach changes in that statute right now.
Assistant Commissioner.
Chair, Representative, certainly we would be happy to go back and get you some aggregated data. I can tell you right now, and I don't want to be too specific given the very small number of complaints that we've had and that the data on those individuals and their associations is not public, but I can tell you that the comments that have been made by the members of the public today are indicative of the issues that we have been seeing. And I think the issues that we've been seeing based on the review of the information we've gathered so far seems to be very on point with the discussions that we've had today. Access to documents, fees, maintenance, those tend to be the most common elements that we have seen in the requests for help that we've received.
Representative, yeah. Chair O'Driscoll.
Yeah, thank you. I just think it would be helpful for us to have that information at a go-forward basis. And I'm not surprised that you're hearing the same things, because I think the folks who are testifying today are looking for relief, and they were here when we were talking about this last year. So I suspect they were camping out as they were getting concert tickets the old-fashioned way in hard copy.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have a bill for that later. Huh? Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, I really appreciate you being here. And with that, we will move to House File 3479. I know our author of that bill is just hopefully finishing up in State Gov, so I'm going to be pinch hitting for him. So here we go.
Okay, Madam Chair, we're now hearing House File 3479. It's one of Chair Freiberg's, is the author, and you're playing Representative Freiberg right now. And the subject is to postpone mortgage sale clarified. So would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will move House File 3479 to Judiciary. And with that, I will present the bill. So there is an author's amendment in here as well. The author's amendment comes from the real property section of the Minnesota Bar Association. It's meant to ensure clear title by providing that defective postponement affidavit does not invalidate the foreclosure. And with that, I'll move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that Representative Freiberg would like it.
Okay. And Chair, can you describe the amendment briefly?
Probably not, but maybe one of these guys can.
Chair, members, my name is Eric Cook. I'm an attorney for the last 35 years handling foreclosure matters for lenders on that side. And I can tell you in the last 16 years that this borrower postponement legislation has been in place. It's worked quite well. Just to kind of give you a broad overview, it's a very, very narrow part of the foreclosure process. What it is an opportunity to give homeowners a delay of 5 months to keep alive their right to reinstate defaults under their mortgage when they've gone into a foreclosure proceeding. Generally, it's easier for a homeowner to catch up the missed payments versus having to refinance and pay off the entire bill to get out of foreclosure. So the bill itself, what it does is changes the normal timeline of a foreclosure.
Yeah, we can. This is just about the A1 amendment right now, and then we'll get.
Oh, just the A1 amendment? Oh, sorry about that. This is, I guess, we kind of refer to this as a safe harbor provision, and what it does is helps minimize clouds to title. So, in the event that a lender accepts and honors a borrower postponement affidavit from a homeowner, and let's say it later turns out to be defective or untimely for some reason, it will not punish the lender. for accepting that that late or defective borrower postponement affidavit. It will minimize clouds to title by allowing the foreclosure to remain valid.
And okay, Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment, it looks just to add effective dates after the sections, and so
okay,
probably
great.
Need
would you like in. To renew your motion?
I will renew that we adopt the A1 amendment.
Okay, so done. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
All right.
The bill is in the shape you would prefer.
Thank you. So this bill just makes it clear that the postponement of a mortgage foreclosure sale into applies in two specific circumstances where there's been some legal ambiguity. It also clears up confusion regarding the length of redemption period when a homeowner postpones a foreclosure sale and then files for bankruptcy. And finally, the bill makes it clear that if the homeowner dies, the heirs have the right to postpone the sale and retain the home. By way of background, in 2029, during the foreclosure crisis, the Minnesota legislature passed a bill to help homeowners save their homes from foreclosure by allowing them to postpone mortgage. So the statutes that we're amending today are intended to extend the period in which the homeowner can reinstate. The law helps innumerable homeowners keep their homes. Lenders and homeowners alike agree that it's far better to give the homeowner every opportunity to keep the house and continue mortgage payments than having it wind up with the lender. If we want to have some member questions, and then I can, Mr. Cook is here, as well as Ms. Daly from Legal Aid to answer any questions.
Okay. We can proceed to public testimony. Welcome to the committee. First testifier on the list is Ron Elwood.
Mr. Chair, members, I was actually just going to defer my time to Ms. Daly to answer questions. You're very short on time.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Ms. Daly.
Thank you.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, chairs and members. My name is Colleen Daly. I'm a staff attorney at Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. I have represented hundreds of homeowners in foreclosure. Allowing homeowners to postpone is a very good way to let them catch up and maybe get a loan modification from their lender, essentially allowing them to save their home, save their equity. This bill simply, it broadens the universe of who can postpone, so to include heirs. So if somebody dies in the process, one of their kids or whoever stands to inherit the house can postpone the sale and potentially give them more time to save the home. And then it also clarifies some legal ambiguities about when homeowners can postpone. So it makes it more clear, gives them clearly more opportunities to postpone, where in the past sometimes that's been questionable. So that is basically it. I'm happy to answer questions if anybody has questions.
Thank you, Ms. Daly. Any Representative Freiberg, would you like to maybe say a few words quick?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First of all, I apologize for my delay. There were close votes in the committee I serve on that was going on at the same time. So I don't know what's been said. I know we're close to adjournment time, but this, you know, so I'll just maybe leave it at that. I'm assuming you did an excellent job presenting the bill, and at the risk of being duplicative, I will not repeat what you likely said. I'll just say this is a good consumer protection bill, and I appreciate your consideration of it.
Thank you. Mr. Cook, would you like to add anything to your previous testimony?
Just real briefly, in the interest of saving time, from a big picture perspective, this bill has always been a good tool available for homeowners to avoid a foreclosure process. It also adds value to lenders as well, because lenders don't want to foreclose on a house. They don't want to have to take a house back into their inventory and sell it on a liquidated basis. And what this does is gives a homeowner an opportunity to return their mortgage loan to a performing loan, which is good for lenders. The only cost to a lender in this overall process is it adds 1 week to the overall foreclosure timeline. But in exchange for that, the lender Does get that benefit of avoiding losses, which they take in every foreclosure. It also removes many of the ambiguities that have existed in this statute for the last 16 years. Now, most of those ambiguities are not apparent on the face of the statute, but when you work with the statute on a day-to-day basis, a number of questions and ambiguities arise out of how you implement the statute. And the four changes being proposed here in this bill today go a long ways toward removing those ambiguities and giving us more certainty in the foreclosure process, and as a result, more certainty to title to real estate.
Thank you so much. With that, we can move to member questions. Any member questions? Great, seeing none. Representative Freiberg, if you'd like to wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the committee's consideration.
With that, I will move House File 3479 as amended to Judiciary. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, we got like a few more minutes. Five more minutes. So if we want to do Representative Freiberg, I will move House File 704 to be laid over for possible inclusion if you'd like to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you want to move the amendment, amendment as well?
Oh, yes. There is a A1 amendment to the to House File 704. I will move the A1 amendment. Can you please explain the amendment for us?
Yeah, thank you. So this just corrects the drafting error identified by House Research. And actually, could you please have a page maybe bring me the copy of the bill, the amendment, and the handouts?
Sure.
Since I came here in a bit of a rush, I didn't have time to grab them. Thank you for your consideration of the amendment.
Oh, there. Representative Heinzman, thank you. All right. If you'd like to go ahead and any discussion to the A1 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Freiberg, if you'd like to present your bill as amended.
Thank you. House File 704 is a bipartisan bill intended to address problems that occur when a mortgage payoff statement has an inaccurate amount on it. Real estate closings depend on the accuracy of mortgage payoff statements issued by mortgagees and mortgage servicers. House File 704 amends Minnesota law to establish a clear framework governing reliance on payoff statements and the correction of understated payoff amounts. I know we're close to time. I have a longer description of the bill, so maybe I'll just leave it at that and give time to my testifiers.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. With that, we have the other bill. Sorry, I'm also out of whack here. All right, testifiers, we have Adam Shad. Did I get that right?
Good enough. Adam Shad.
Shad. And Chad Novak, and followed by Keenan Raverty. So if you'd like to proceed with your testimony, state your name properly and proceed, please.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Adam Shad. I'm with the Minnesota Land Title Association. I'll give the short version as well. This is a bill about fairness and efficiency in Minnesota's real estate market. As part of the home sale process, title companies get a payoff statement from a lender, so we know how much has to be paid to satisfy the mortgage. In most situations, that goes great. On the day of closing, we wire the funds according to the terms of that statement. The lender receives them and satisfies the mortgage. We've run into growing issues with a multiple number of national servicers who give the payoff statement, we send the funds on time, and then sometimes a week later, sometimes 3 weeks later, we get notified that there are more money is due. They want another $1,000, another $2,000. They won't satisfy the mortgage until they receive it. They will continue to accrue interest on the entire principal balance. As title companies, we're sort of left holding the bag. There's an innocent purchaser who is facing the risk of foreclosure, and it causes chaos. It causes unpredictable results. And so what our bill does is offers a simple solution. If a lender provides a payoff statement and a consumer relies on it and makes that payoff, the lender can no longer use mortgage foreclosure as a leverage to get more funds from an innocent purchaser or the title company who ends up paying out of pocket just to save the transaction from chaos. Keeping it quick, that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have been given the okay to go another 5 minutes. So, Mr. Novak, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chad Novak. I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Land Title Association, where I'm a board member and legislative committee co-chair. And this bill is really, the effects of it are twofold. The first is to conform some discrepancies in existing law. Under Minnesota Statute Section 47208, upon written request by a debtor or a borrower, a lender is required within 45 days to send a recordable satisfaction to that requestor. Contrarily, under Minnesota Statute 50741, upon request, it states that a lender shall discharge a mortgage within 10 days of that request. House File 704 seeks to conform that discrepancy, instead rendering it a mandatory process that the lender, upon receiving a payoff in satisfaction of their mortgage, submit for recording a satisfaction, discharge, release, whatever you want to call it, within the public records. So remove that discrepancy. The second function of the bill, as you heard from Mr. Schott, is to give us certainty and reliability in mortgage payoff statements. A mortgage payoff statement is requested typically within 30 days or less of closing. At that point, the lender will send in or remit a payoff statement, including a per diem, all fees and charges due and owing, and the title company or the purchaser and their lender rely on that statement in proceeding with the closing, only to be surprised later in these instances by additional funds and a refusal to discharge or release the mortgage. This bill seeks to place that requirement on a lender to abide by their written payoff statement when the title industry or a purchaser or their lender has relied on that statement, and upon delivery of that statement and delivery of funds in compliance with that statement, release that mortgage. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Raverty? And if you could just give us a quick minute.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Keenan Raverty. I'm here as chair of the Government Affairs Committee for the Minnesota Mortgage Association, and I appreciate you having me. I'm going to go a bit off script because I know that we are tough on time today, but I just wanted to bring more of a pragmatic and practitioner's perspective to this issue. I spent the last 34 years in mortgage lending, mortgage banking, all of those in Minnesota. And until just retiring from frontline origination a few months back, headed mortgage production in Minnesota for the largest mortgage lender in the state. What's a head scratcher about this bill, and the mortgage industry wants timely satisfactions, we want accurate payoffs, but this issue has quantifiably never been better in the history of our industry. If you can harken back to when I got back into the business in 1992, you'd literally, a servicing center that works satisfactions and payoffs would have a room full of desks and people who had a telephone, a 10-key calculator, and an ashtray. And fast forward to today with technology, we have borrowers with real-time access to information. They can literally go on their phone or their computer and see all the details of their mortgage, how interest has been accrued, have taxes dispersed, and they can request a payoff statement. We've worked cooperatively over the years with the Minnesota Land Title Association, and we will continue to do so, but this bill misses the mark, has a lot of technical issues, and I will join with the Minnesota Bankers Association and the Minnesota Credit Union Network in opposing this bill as drafted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Raverty, and we will be laying this bill over so it gives us opportunities to continue to work on it together. We have like 2 minutes left. Anybody have any questions for the author? Wonderful. Seeing none, I will move that House File 704 as amended be laid over for possible Representative Freiberg, would you like any closing remarks?
Sure. I appreciate the testimony. I did meet with representatives of the lenders yesterday. I'm happy to keep working with them as this goes forward. As you noted, the bill is being laid over. I do think it addresses an important issue, and I appreciate that the situation's never been better. That doesn't mean that understatements don't happen. If there were time, I'd ask the testifiers to come back and give some sense of the scope. But recognizing your time, I'll just say I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. With that, I renew my motion that 704, as amended, is laid over. With that, Chair O'Driscoll, would you like to give us a preview of tomorrow? Or?
In the interest of time, just be here at 8:15 and find out what's going on then.
Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.